Hello, my name is Robin McKinney. I'm a pediatric intensivist at Hasbro Children's Hospital and an assistant professor of pediatrics at Brown University. At this podcast, I will be talking about neurally adjusted ventilatory assist, also known as NAVA, use in severe bronchopulmonary dysplasia. The focus of this podcast is to understand what is NAVA and also to understand why NAVA makes physiologic sense in BPD. There's very little evidence to support the use of NAVA in pediatrics. There's a little bit of evidence to support using it in adults. And really what we want to do is try to figure out what the evidence shows us and how are we going to use NAVA effectively and how are we going to design clinical trials to answer the questions that we think need to be answered, especially as it relates to severe BPD. So quickly, what is neurally adjusted ventilatory assist, also known as NAVA? So it's a novel form of ventilation that, unlike traditional ventilators that rely on a flow trigger or a pressure trigger, actually syncs with the electrical activity of the diaphragm through a specialized catheter, a specialized modified nasogastric tube that has electrodes on it that pick up the electrical activity of the diaphragm, measure the electrical activity of the diaphragm, and when a breath is initiated, pick up on that and sync the ventilator with the diaphragm, both for inhalation and exhalation. The diaphragmatic activity or electrical activity of the diaphragm is called the EDI, with the max relating to the peak of inspiration, and the EDI min is the resting electrical tonic activity of the diaphragm at the end of exhalation. So NAVA, theoretically, and from what little data we've collected from the adults, has been shown to improve patient ventilator synchrony. So why does that make sense in chronic lung disease of prematurity or severe bronchopulmonary dysplasia, severe BPD? It makes sense because severe BPD is a very heterogeneous disease. It's both obstructive in nature, it's restrictive in nature. There's also areas of the lung that have normal lung parenchyma. So what you're going to see is a very heterogeneous time constants throughout the lung, as you've got areas with normal compliance, normal resistance, low compliance, high resistance, high compliance, low resistance, normal compliance, and high resistance. All of these different areas sort of conspire against the patient when you're trying to ventilate them. And we've found that through expert opinion, we use a high PEEP, high tidal volume, low respiratory rate, high eye time to ventilate these patients when they do have severe BPD and they are very difficult to ventilate. But we know from experience that those ventilator settings aren't necessarily physiologic. And that can lead to the BPD spells that we're familiar with, which is where the patient will bear down, the flow on the ventilator will go to zero, they will not synchronize with the ventilator will fire, the patient will not take a breath, they will desaturate, and they can, even extreme instances, end up having a bradycardic event. And to overcome these limitations of the ventilator and avoid these spells, the patients oftentimes are heavily sedated. So if we could come up with a mode of ventilation that would allow for the ventilator to work with the patient better, then theoretically, we would have a better way of ventilating children with severe BPD. So that is, in essence, what NAVA does. So it provides the support in proportion to the inspiratory effort based off the diaphragm, the electrical activity of the diaphragm. The baby is driving the ventilator. In the NAVA mode of ventilation, the infant controls the inflation pressure, the onset of inspiration, the termination of a breath, their respiratory rate. The only things that are really set is that you have your FiO2, the NAVA level, which I'll get into, the PEEP, and a trigger based off of the electrical activity of the diaphragm, and then an apnea delay and backup rate. So if the patient goes apneic, you allow for a certain amount of delay and you set how long that is, whether it's 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, and then the ventilator will kick back in and start ventilating the baby in a pressure control mode. So the NAVA level, to go back, is based off of the equation, the peak inspiratory pressure is equal to the NAVA level times the EDI max minus the EDI min plus the PEEP. So it's really an abstract number that will be set on the ventilator that is the way that you provide more support. So you give more support by increasing the NAVA level. And if you see that the patient's EDI max is out of range, what you're shooting for is between EDI max of 10 to 15, that implies that the patient is working harder on the mode of ventilation and they need more support for each breath. And so you'll increase the NAVA level until your EDI max is within that range. The EDI min really ought to be near zero. And that is a reflection of the tonic activity of the diaphragm at the end of exhalation. And if it's not near zero, that suggests that there's a certain degree of auto-PEEP that the patient is applying themselves, and that the diaphragm is still active at the end of exhalation, and that the patient needs more support in the setting of increasing the PEEP to allow them to have adequate gas exchange. So what evidence is there to use NAVA in severe BPD? Well, actually, there's very, very, very limited evidence. There's one study that is specific to severe BPD, and that showed that infants supported with NAVA had a reduced need for sedation, and that there were fewer cyanotic episodes when they were switched from conventional ventilation to NAVA. And I think it's an important study despite its limitations. The limitations being is that it didn't have a control lead into the study. They just took patients from a variety of different modes of ventilation, whether it's pressure control, volume guarantee, and put them onto NAVA, and the patients did better once they were put on NAVA. But without a control, you can't really say it's necessarily better than conventional ventilation. We just say that it showed that they had a reduced need for sedation. But I think that's an important finding in and of itself. And that's going to inform how we look at future trials. Now, there's four other studies that looked at infants with chronic lung disease or who were in the process of developing chronic lung disease. And the limitations of those four studies is that they were a very heterogeneous group of individuals. So it wasn't all specific to severe BPD. Some of them didn't have BPD, some of them did. What all those studies found is that NAVA was associated with a lower peak inspiratory pressure. Some of those studies show that there was a lower FiO2 and decreased work of breathing when they were placed on NAVA. And in non-invasive NAVA, so NIV-NAVA, which is also used where the ventilator through nasal prongs, the patient is given non-invasive ventilation and it syncs with the ventilator similarly to the invasive form of NAVA, they showed that there was better patient-ventilator synchrony, which again makes sense and has been repeated and shown to be true in multiple adult studies. I think like any mode of ventilation, it is a tool that can be used correctly or incorrectly. So while there is lots of debate in the pediatric literature looking at pressure control versus volume control, whether high frequency is the correct mode of ventilation to ventilate patients in ARDS, what it really comes down to is using it correctly and choosing the correct patients. And NAVA is like any other ventilator mode. What we need to do is that we need to figure out which patients are going to benefit best from it. And what I'm investigating is using NAVA in severe bronchopulmonary dysplasia. There's no evidence right now to suggest that NAVA is good or bad in severe BPD. But from a physiologic standpoint, there's a lot of reasons why NAVA may be a better form of ventilation than pressure control, volume control, or the more traditional flow and pressure triggered ventilations. The more traditional flow or pressure triggered forms of ventilation. So what we need to do is we need to design trials to sort of test this. And currently NAVA is being used by a number of different centers, and we're doing research into how physicians are using it at those different centers, what patients are choosing it for, what their success rates are, and looking at their baseline background research. But as I said, there's no hard data to support or refute the use of it. And so I think it's important to keep that in mind as we move forward, that what we need to do is identify the population and that we think it'll work in. I think it's going to work in severe BPD. And then design trials based off of the physiologic data that we already have and the knowns and unknowns of BPD and NAVA, and use NAVA specifically for that. Clinically, what we were trying to do is figure out if NAVA is a better form of ventilation in severe BPD than the conventional forms of ventilation that we are currently using. And I think like any other ventilation, as I said earlier, NAVA really is a tool. And we want to use it as a tool, and we want to use it correctly. So we need to test it in the right patients, figure out which patients are the right patients, and then design our studies to answer very discrete questions that are clinically relevant and not just statistically relevant. Because the last thing we want to do is we don't want to take NAVA and compare it to bad ventilation practices and prove that NAVA is better than good ventilation is bad, better than bad ventilation. What we want to do is show that NAVA is useful in severe BPD and not just another sort of gimmick that people are using. So how are we going to do that? Our own unpublished data has shown that, yes, patients appear more comfortable on NAVA when switched from a conventional mode of ventilation, and that you do have better patient ventilator synchrony, and that it can be used successfully in about 63% of the time, with one third of the patients who are switched to it are able to be extubated. But again, it's only 63% of the time, so there's still approximately 40% of patients fail being put on NAVA, which says to me that we don't know which patients are going to benefit the most from this form of ventilation. So how are we going to test this? How are we going to test this hypothesis? We need to protocolize the parameters for which we start our conventional settings on. So the patients all need to be ventilated in a similar manner before they're switched to NAVA on conventional modes of ventilation, with appropriate levels of PEEP, tidal volumes, and respiratory rates that will adequately support these patients, and then switch them over to NAVA and see if they're really better. And then what are we going to test? Are we going to test that a peak inspiratory pressure difference between the two forms of ventilation? That's been shown to be lower on NAVA, but I'm not sure that a peak inspiratory pressure difference of 20 centimeters of water versus 18 centimeters of water that's statistically significant really has any clinical significance for us. And so what we need to do is we need to look at other metrics of success. So we can come up with a patient ventilator synchrony index. And the way we can do that is the NAVA catheter, as I said, measures the electrical activity of the diaphragm and when the patient is going to breathe or not. Well, it doesn't just sync with the ventilator. It also records that data, and it can be used in a recording mode only. So you can place a NAVA catheter into a patient on conventional ventilation and record when they're actually trying to breathe, and then look at the ventilator and see when the ventilator is delivering a breath based off of a flow trigger or a pressure trigger. And if the patient is breathing based off of the electrical activity of the diaphragm, the EDI, and the ventilator is not delivering a breath, then the patient has a clear patient ventilator asynchrony, and you can come up with an index and index that. And that would be clinically important. Further, if you're able to show, like Lee et al. Showed in that paper, that they were able to reduce the amount of sedation given to a patient once they're placed on NAVA, well, that would actually could have long-term clinical outcomes. It may lead to better neurodevelopmental outcomes. Of course, it's very hard to test. You're talking about having to follow patients for 2 years and do detailed testing. Furthermore, you also have to think about, if they're less sedated, are they able to participate in daily activities of life? So that may provide other more intangible improvement in the patient if they're not given all of these sedative medications and they're able to be more awake. Other things that we can think about when we're looking at this is, will we be able to decrease the oxygenation index, the mean airway pressure, their minute ventilation, respiratory severity score? So all of these things need to be investigated to see if the patients are more comfortable and have sort of lower PaCO2s, have lower FiO2 requirements. That might be clinically significant. But how are we going to do that? And the long-term neurodevelopmental outcomes aside, the length of stay and the ventilator days, which is what everybody gets really excited about, and potentially if we can wean them from the ventilator faster using NAVA, that would be important to know. But how are we going to do it in a shorter period of time, looking at oxygenation, MAP, FiO2, and sedative use and comfort scores? How are we going to do that? And really the best way to do that is looking at crossover trials. So a crossover trial might be able to show, if you randomize the patients to NAVA for, say, 4 to 7 days on conventional ventilation versus, say, 4 to 7 days on the NAVA form of ventilation, cross them over halfway through, then you may be able to show that the patient's more comfortable, that you've been able to come down on your ventilator settings. So all of these would be clinically relevant to us. In terms of discharging patients home, this also has clinical implications. So if the patient becomes more comfortable on NAVA and they're able to be weaned, that's great. If you wean them faster and you're able to extubate them, as about one third of patients seem to be extubatable from NAVA, well, then that would certainly be an important finding. But what about the patients who are going to be chronically ventilated? If they have really severe bronchopulmonary dysplasia, they may be going home with a trach and a vent. And if they're going home on a trach and a vent, NAVA is not available outpatient. There are no home ventilators that have this mode of ventilation. So at some point, you're going to have to switch them back to a flow-triggered form of ventilation. Anecdotally, and we don't have this don't have data to back this up yet, but I can tell you from almost near 100% of the people I talk to who do use NAVA, that everyone says that the patients become habituated to it. They absolutely love it. And when you try to switch them back to an LTV for to discharge them on a flow-triggered form of ventilation, they become very agitated. You may actually end up increasing your length of stay if they can't be weaned off of NAVA because they like it so much. Now, we don't know that. I don't think that NAVA is better, and I don't think it's worse. I think that it needs to be investigated, and I think that it needs to be investigated well so that we figure out how to use it as a tool and not as a gimmick. Thank you for listening today. For more information on the references cited, please click on the link below.